Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
Utopia or everyday life?
I think a combination.
Organization or chaos?
For me, it's totally chaos.
I'd go for organization, I think.
Leo von Klenze or Archigram?
Archigram, for me.
Leo von Klenze.
Athens is a city full of contradictions, planned and chaotic at the same time, monumental and improvised, historically layered and constantly transforming. It is exactly between these opposites that the master thesis Brave New Axis by Spiridon Loukidis, Marcos Georgios Sakelion, and Georgios Thalassinos from the National Technical University of Athens unfolds. The three architects received the prestigious EU MIS Young Talent Award 2025 for their work, one of the most important European awards for emerging architects, presented and awarded during the Venice Biennale. Their project begins with a nearly forgotten historical axis running through the center of Athens. But instead of understanding the city as a rigid geometric order, they reinterpret Athens as a network of relationships, fragments, atmospheres, and public spaces. Their work moves somewhere between urban design, architectural theory, collage, political vision, and spatial storytelling. The drawings recall Archigram, Superstudio, and radical architectural visions, while simultaneously addressing very real issues such as public space, housing, urban voids, and the future of European city centers. Today, we, Diane Slavic and Eva Herrmann, talk with them about Athens, urban fragments, new strategies for European cities, and why architecture today may be less about objects and more about relationships.
Hello and a very warm welcome in our today's Jung Talks podcast. Great to have you with us.
Thank you for having us.
First of all, our congratulations on winning the EU MIS Young Talent Award. What does this award mean to you?
Well, first of all, of course, it's a great honor to get this award. At the same time, it's really nice that all our work and all our efforts are being rewarded in a way. I mean, it didn't necessarily have to be with this award, but it's nice to see that all the difficulties and everything we went through is actually paid off and it's recognized by other people as well.
But simultaneously, this award means that maybe it's not the people or the architect that are getting awarded, but the ideas behind them and an alternative way to see the city or a critical way to think of architecture and everyday life. So this is also important for us.
Yeah, I'm glad to have the opportunity to participate on all these European dialogues over the last year and all these events and the broader and much needed conversations about the pressing issues our cities face today.
I'm also very glad that after getting this prize, a lot of creative things happened in a year. We actually managed to attend a lot of congresses, talk to a lot of different institutions after that. We have a lot of opportunities. And also, that's great for a young architect to start his career.
So, and to help our listeners, how would you describe Brave New Axis in three words or images, like audio images?
Well, Brave New Axis is three words.
It's not going to work. The first is going to be the utopian, maybe.
I don't think utopia is the right word because nowadays we use that word in everything that maybe is different from what today's market is about. So maybe the word speculative, the what will happen if we think something differently. So maybe it's a phrase, not a word. What if? Maybe critical is the next one.
Trying to condense into three words is not that easy.
Something about heritage, maybe?
I would say collage also.
At the center of your project is a historical axis from the 18th century master plan of Athens, a time when the city, after the Greek independence, was meant to become a European capital, ordered, monumental, representative, But in Brave New Axis, you actually tell the story of a very different city, a city of in-between spaces, fragments, hidden relationships. So why were you interested in this almost forgotten lines or axis?
Well, Spiros and I grew up in Athens. The three of us studied in Athens. We were outside in the city center all the time. And this part of Athens is a very interesting area. It's next to the medieval part, next to the modern parts with all the buildings from the 50s and the 60s. But at the same time, it has the ancient monuments, some of the neoclassical monuments, some of the Byzantine monuments. It's basically a link to all the different areas and eras of Athens. And it was really interesting. And for us that studied in Athens, the urban planning of Athens in the 1830s is a very important lesson at our school. So we were familiar with all the different design stages this had been through.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at a map or when you look at a drawing from that era, what was supposed to be, and then look at the actual map, is when you start to realize, oh, they were thinking of doing that there, but they didn't. They did that, and this is that. And there was this huge clear line cutting through the city. And we were trying to say, okay, where is this? What happened to that? And that's how we started looking into it, I think. It was something that intrigued us to look further into it and explore what happened there.
I remember at the beginning of this project, our professors said to us, now you have to walk all over the area again and again. And you have to discover it again because you knew the area as a user, which is a significant part of everyday life. But now you have to discover it also as an architect to try to find what's behind the elements that you see at first sight. That's actually what we did. We were walking around in 38 degrees during the summer, just looking at the buildings, how the building uses a shift from the past 5 years in the ground level. For example, let's say about 5 years ago, some shops closed and after that new opened or the uses changed. And what I understood from that is that Athens is quite hybrid, vertical and horizontal at the same time. When you try to discover a building, you see that maybe on the ground floor there is a shop, but the next level there is a warehouse, and after that there is an office. And it's really interesting how different elements function in one building. And of course, when you go from the west side of the axis to the east side, you see all these distinct elements that you discover as you crossing it. There is also this line in the center of the axis that connects the Omonia Square to the Monastiraki area. It really divides the Athenian triangle into two halves, the commercial one and the one that tries to find its identity today.
I think that's the main point. We tend to redefine all this grid and this strict line to a more dynamic and pivotal structure, like different points and urban voids that a person actually encounters along the journey that you make inside the city. And you can meet different kinds of qualities, like you have the residential use in one side, and the other side you have all this commercial urban area. And we try to redefine it, reimagine all this kind of new living in the city and how we can truly respect and somehow reduce all this gentrification in the new city and the over-touristic part of Athens.
In the preliminary conversation, you talked about a city within a city. So urban space is hidden between buildings that could potentially become collective spaces, but are often unused. Why are you so interested in these urban voids?
When you think about an axis, you see the line, but if you try to discover what's happening behind it, you will see some points that constitute the line itself. That points are actually empty, vast spaces that are in need of having an identity. Some of them are those spaces that they constitute the city within the city. We did a mapping of the whole area and to try to discover how many these spaces are and how we can use them. For example, one of them, the one that we designed it as a labyrinth, it has actually the nodes of a labyrinth within the arcades of the commercial center of Athens. So each one of these voids plays a crucial role in the city. And they actually, if you try to rediscover them, may change the whole city. Actually, this inquiry was the first that we thought when we engaged with the area. If we change the points, does the whole transform? That was the first question that we had in our minds.
It's interesting in Athens that because of probably the heat and how the urban blocks are laid, which is not in the grid always, you have all these arcades connecting, passing through the private buildings, but they are used by the public to go from one place to another. They have shops in the shade and it creates a different scale to the rest of the city. And these at many points connect to these light wells and these empty spaces. But at the same time, there are other buildings that have these empty spaces that are not used. So the public doesn't use them. People that live and use these buildings don't use them because it's everyone's and nobody's at the same time. So this is something that happens in Athens. This semi-private, semi-public space exists, but other points it doesn't. So why not try to give it a push and help these areas that are really interesting? They protect you from the shade. They protect you from the noise and the rest of the issues of the city. And at some points you use them, at some points you don't. So it was interesting to see what changes, what could change, and what's the difference in all these.
We definitely have to talk about your drawings and your collars, which reminded me on Articom. I had a look at them and I said, oh, it's like utopia. So they're so wonderful. What's first, the theory or the collage? And why can collage sometimes communicate the city better than photorealistic rendering or an image or something like this? So why do you choose this kind of image?
I think because the city itself is a collage. So you have to use the same language.
It's an experimentation between thinking and drawing at the same time. That process that goes back and forth. So it was the day of the presentation and we printed everything and we put it on the walls. We were like, oh my God, everything is so different. But we understood that we had drawn a lot of different things, a lot of different styles. But Jerry actually also pointed this out. Well, we are three people in one project. We have distinct perspectives. And there is a phrase that we also started our book of this project. It is from Gilles, the legend Félix Guattari, Capitalism and Schizophrenia. It's the book, The 1,000 Plateaus. And at the beginning, they say, since each of us several, there was already quite a crowd. We were three, so imagine how different the drawings are going to be.
And I think at the same time, it had maybe some kind of connection with Impressionism, that this is how we see the things, that's how we feel about these things. I don't need to give you an ultra-realistic rendering of a building I'm imagining. I'll give you the idea of it through my eyes, how I see the city. We saw the city as a collage itself because it has all these layers history and architectural styles and everything. I think it fit the description and the whole theme of our project, that the city is a collage, our work was a collage. Why not the drawings become a collage as well?
I also remember when we start this thesis, we chose some of these drawings for the final presentation, and it was totally describe everything. One drawing from the beginning was the main point for our final presentation. That's really important because we present drawings for all this process during our thesis.
Would you say that architecture nowadays needs new visions? Marcos, for example, you said like rendering that shows exactly the reality might be a little bit boring. So should we think more in these kind of collages, visions, however, maybe to make it also more understandable for people who are not that close to architecture?
Well, I think architects should experiment more and maybe find a critical way to understand what's happening in everyday life and from that to start thinking, what if we work differently?
It depends on the project and who you intend to be the recipient of these images. if we were in the city and it was this partially utopian, but at the same time grounded research in the city, and it was for an architectural thesis, our main audience at first would be our colleagues, the students of our school, our teachers. I think collages and the different approach to these things is more easily digestible by architects. If you were planning on showing something to, I don't know, a client, if you're designing a house, or somebody that is not maybe as familiar as you are with all these different kinds of expression, they might not be so easily convinced, or they might not realize what the vision was. I think it depends on the project. It depends on who you're planning on showing it to, what your mood on that day was. It's a whole lot of things. Realistic renderings have a very important role. It's how you communicate to other people your vision. If I'm going to buy a house and paying an architect to build me a house, I want to see what the finished product will be. I want to see what actually is going on. And I don't want just a collage of a kitchen over another kitchen or something like that. There's some things that need to be practical, realistic, but at the same time, there's other things that give you the freedom to express yourself and to be more playful. And I feel like in the large scale as well, when you don't have the time or it's not really necessary to design each and every detail, not that we didn't go to the detail of designing the toilets and the lifts and everything, but I think this gives you more of a creative freedom to say, that's the idea. I'm not going to show you exactly how the door opens at this point because it's not necessary. I'll show you a door. I'll show you an opening. I think it has to do with scale and what's your...
The audience.
Yeah.
When engaging with the urban context, maybe you should try to show the system that we thought about the city and not just the final image of it. To explain your vision, your thoughts, and try to pass to the people that they are going to live in that area, your vision about it.
You've just mentioned the role of the critical architect. We are facing problems like housing crisis, over tourism, the difference between private and public spaces, or the in-between spaces. Do we need some other or stronger shared urban tragedies today? And how do we get them?
Well, housing in general in Europe is a significant issue. So trying to find alternative ways to deal with this problem, we as architects, we should prioritize that. Discover alternative forms of property, maybe that would make living in a house more affordable. We need to do that, let's say, in the European level. We see today some initiatives such as House Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The work is really important. So maybe should unite our voices in some issues, and housing is one of it.
Would you say that your generation thinks like more seriously about these topics than the older one? Do you see a difference?
We see a difference in the way that we think about them. People from different ages are dealing with the same issues, and actually by talking with them, you understand that you have the same problems. Maybe our generation is trying to think of a critical way about how our cities will be more eco-friendly, or how we will reuse the buildings that we already have. We don't need any more buildings. We have a lot of buildings, especially in the historic center of our cities. Athens is full of empty buildings right now that would solve the housing crisis.
I think what's different in our generation is that it's way easier to connect with other people, whether it is through the internet, social media, blogs, YouTube, anything like that,
mm-hmm.
or through traveling. Traveling is way more affordable and way easier than it used to be in previous generations. The flights are cheaper. You can sometimes find cheaper accommodation than it used to be. It's not necessarily something that is only for the elite or for the very top tiers of a society. It's something that almost everyone can do. I think it's very good for our generation that we can travel. We have similar issues with cities around us. We need to look how they found solutions to their problems. We can meet other people that might have similar interests, might have the exact opposite interests. It doesn't really matter, but it's that you have the way to do it and it's way more accessible than it used to be, I think is very important. And it's really interesting how it shapes our generation and how it changes our perceptions. Solutions in Barcelona or Rome or Paris or whatever, they're not something that is far away, out of mind, out of sight. You can go and look at them. You can look it up on the internet. There's no way to say, oh, I had no idea what happens everywhere else. You can look it up. And people, I think, do things like that.
As you mentioned it, it's hard to get an exit to the market. So what chance does a younger generation have to get involved into these problem solving into the cities?
It's also really crucial for the younger professionals like us to study and work in different environments and travel a lot, because it's completely changed our perspective, I'm going to say. And they also bring fresh ideas back to their homes and countries while contributing to a global dialogue also. A modern metropolis faces complex challenges, both in different cities, like house pricing, climatic changes, and all these kind of things. They have to find similar solutions, cannot be isolated. All this collaboration and sharing data, the new generation can engage in continuous and critical evaluation of these shared realities.
You developed Brave New Access as students. Now, it's already a while ago, you've entered the professional life. How does the transition feel for you? What are the plans for future? If I remember correctly, you have like kind of different plans.
It's different now that you finished your studies and you're actually at the professional environment. Everyday life is definitely different. I think at the same time, our profession allows us to constantly think of new things and try to learn new things. So it's not that we've stopped our research, not that we stopped our goals or ideas or anything. It has sifted, it has changed, but it's still smaller, but still part of our lives. As far as the future goes, I don't really know what I'm going to do. I like this new daily life, the professional world, and how it's different to the academic one, but I don't really have any specific plans for not even the near future.
But one of you said completely different, so where is the other future idea?
Well, the path for me is going to be totally different. At the first years of my professional life, I found myself engaging with construction, which can be good in order to get some experience on how you will construct something that you will design in the future. But I don't think I'm meant for this kind of work. So after also getting awarded last year, I talked with myself and discovered that I need to be more creative. I spent the whole year searching for a more post-master's program, and that's something that I will follow the next year. I really like to transform my theory and text into design. So let's say that I will try to create my own practice on this theme, but we'll see how that goes. In general, I think that the vision of architecture is what I want to be engaged more rather than the actual profession.
So, Spiros, now it's up to you.
I want to stay here and actively contribute to the future of our city. My goal is to use all this opportunity from the world to push for real challenges, whether that means designing pedestrian paths and urban planning in Athens, green corridors, or trying to turn empty buildings into a new character like social housing, to pass all this theory and be a real action, I can say. I want to make sure that my work as an artist truly serves the people and the society, and I live in every single day.
We have a traditional closing question. If you could spend one day working together with an architectural group or an architect or an artistic movement from the history, who would it be?
So I would say Ricardo Bofill. When I was in Barcelona, I've witnessed his work at La Fabrica and also his residential project, Golden 7. the title of which is actually from a book that is called Walden 2. So yes, I was fascinated by the spaces that he created. Yeah, Ricardo Bofill would be the one that I would love to work with.
The only one that I can think of right now is because I'm looking at this painting behind me, which is a sketch from the Sagrada Familia. And we were in Barcelona a couple of weeks ago, at least for the first few months of the year. I'd like maybe Gaudí. I'm not the greatest of fans of his work, but I really admire how different he was from the rest of the architecture of his period and how he combined these practical studies along with drawings and naturalistic inspiration. He hung these weights from the chains to see what the arch shape should be, but at the same time, he had these very detailed floral details of these buildings. I think it would be really interesting to see that man at work and how he, in a strict neoclassical or neo-Gothic society of the time, he went into a completely new and groundbreaking direction, but at the same time had this very practical approach as well.
For me, it would have to be Luis Barragán, something different from European vision. Barragán knows how to build landscapes of memory using light, shadows, the water and all these elements, create a sense of white reflection and serves a true memorial to the human spirit.
Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for your time, for your insights, the inspiring ideas. We wish you all the very best for your next steps in your future work. And for our listeners, we'll hear us again in our next episode of the Jung Talks podcast.